Dobar dan. Pozdravljeni v naši krasni banki.
Zdravo. Rabim 100 evrov.
Ste plačilno sposobni? Ste za spremenljivo obrestno mero? Mogoče nespremenljivo. Že varčujete pri nas? Vas zanima zavarovanje za primer smrti? Ste za dokapitalizacijo naše banke?
Mah, dej mi kar celo blagajno.
Brez skrbi. Alternative so.
Prisluhnite spoznanjem in dognanjem na področju socialnih posojil v oddaji Eurepa, v kateri preverjamo delovanje londonske organizacije ZOPA UK Loans ter evropsko in domačo politiko do alternativ, ki jih ponujajo socialna posojila. 29. maja ob 10. na valovih Radija Študent.
Eurepa. Delno jo podpira Evropski parlament.
V prvi in drugi oddaji v sklopu projekta Eurepa na temo socialnih posojil so bila predstavljena medosebna posojila in mikrokrediti. Slednji so se kot razvojni mehanizem v državah tretjega sveta pojavili v 70-ih letih prejšnjega stoletja, v zadnjem času pa postajajo vedno bolj razširjeni tudi v razvitih zahodnih državah. Medosebna posojila so po drugi strani novejšega izvora, saj je angleško podjetje ZOPA, ki smo ga predstavili v naši reportaži, prvo na svetu omogočilo ljudem posojanje in dostopanje do kreditov brez institucionalnega posredništva bank. V osnovi je vsem oblikam socialnih posojil skupno to, da skušajo olajšati ljudem dostop do finančnih sredstev, predvsem tistim skupinam, ki jim je znotraj tradicionalnih finančnih struktur to oteženo. Mikrokrediti so najbolj razširjena oblika socialnih posojil po svetu. V zadnjem času pa zbujajo kar precej kontroverznosti in kritik na račun njihove učinkovitosti oziroma neučinkovitosti, zlorab, ki se dogajajo na tem področju in same logike njihovega delovanja. Mikrokrediti so nastali kot mehanizem posojanja finančnih sredstev revnim in zapostavljenim skupinam ljudi na ruralnih območjih držav tretjega sveta. Ta sredstva naj bi jim omogočila, da se z investicijami v lastno podjetništvo postavijo na svoje noge in se izkopljajo iz najhujše revščine. Številke iz raziskav pa kažejo, da tam, kjer je danes dostopnost do mikrokreditov največja, revščina in nezaposlenost ostajata na visoki stopnji. Ker najrevnejši sloji težje dostopajo do potrebnih finančnih sredstev, morajo sprejeti večje obresti strani tistih, ki so jim pripravljeni posojati denar. Ideja sistema mikrofinanc je tako tudi v tem, da se z ugodnejšimi obrestnimi merami skuša preprečiti, da bi ti ljudje zaradi svoje situacije postali žrtev oderuških praks posojanja. A se je tudi to izkazalo, da se zlorabe lahko dogajajo celo znotraj samega sistema, ki je privabil številne špekulante in profiterje. Večja dostopnost posojil brez nadzora je namreč povzročila tudi zadolževanje na več nivojih, ko se najemajo novi krediti za odplačevanje starih dolgov. Znani so številni tovrstni primeri, ki so se zaradi obupa, v katerega so bili pahnjeni ljudje, končali tragično. Na nivoju Evropske unije so njeni voditelji sistem mikrofinanc vključili v politike zmanjševanja brezposelnosti, spodbujanja podjetništva, socialne vključenosti ranljivih skupin in podobno. Različne institucije, ki se ukvarjajo z mikroposojili, so tako pogosto prejemnice subvencij strani vlad ali investicij iz zasebnih sredstev. Evropska komisija v sodelovanju z Evropskim investicijskim skladom vodi več različnih programov za financiranje mikropodjetij oziroma malih in srednje velikih podjetij. Tovrstne spodbude naj bi predvsem v obdobju finančne krize omogočale dostop do finančnih sredstev in ponovno obudile gospodarsko rast in razvoj. Problem pri delovanju mikrokreditnih institucij v Evropski uniji predstavlja predvsem neenotna zakonodaja v posameznih državah članicah. Slednje imajo na tem področju pristojnosti v svojih rokah, vendar velika večina tega področja do zdaj še ni regulirala. Evropska mreža mikrokreditnih organizacij na nadnacionalnem nivoju povezuje različne ponudnike mikrokreditov in se zavzema za sprejetje ugodnih zakonskih okvirov za razvoj teh dejavnosti. O vprašanjih delovanja mikrokreditnih organizacij v Evropski uniji smo se pogovarjali z izvršnim direktorjem omenjene mreže Danielom Sorosalom.
The European Microfinance Network is, as the name says, is where 89 organizations in Europe come together to promote and help grow microfinance in Europe. We have members in 21 countries in Europe, from Ireland to Bulgaria and from Poland to Portugal. And these are all organizations that are working on either on microfinance and providing credit directly or on promoting microfinance indirectly. So we have about 3/4 of our members which are practitioners, so credit-oriented organizations, and about 1/4 which are either academics or foundations, consulting organizations, etc. What we do is basically promote the idea of microfinance in Europe in two ways. First, as a way of promoting the idea of self-employment and self-employment as an alternative to people that may be thinking of starting their activity or maybe unemployed today, and also as a way to support small enterprises in Europe generally. Can be existing small enterprises or new ones.
What kind of institutions and microcredit organizations are gathered in your network? Are these mainly banks or some other non-banking organizations that are providing microcredits?
We have mainly non-banking organizations and some banks, but mainly these are non-banking organizations. This can be from, sometimes it's foundations of banks, sometimes it is NGOs that are working in cooperation with banks. It can also be sort of state or regional programs. So we have really a variety of organizations.
How are you dealing, with whom are you dealing in this promoting microfinance activities in EU?
Mostly with the European Union. We are based in Brussels, and we are sort of the main interlocutor for the European Union on the promotion of microfinance. This was a relatively side issue for a number of years, but it has become quite, let's say, high on the agenda in the last 2-3 years, especially as a response to the crisis.
Yes, but there is still no common legislation on this field in EU member states. I think just France and Romania already legislated it, microfinance activities. Why do you think the EU member states lack political will to do this?
Basically, what happens is that employment policies work under the principle of subsidiarity. So the Commission can propose things, but it's up to the member states to do them in the way they wish. So, for example, the Commission administers the European Social Fund, but then each member state uses it according to its needs within the sort of pre-agreed framework. What we have basically as problems or issues is there's a bank monopoly, which is quite strong in many countries, so the banks don't want to have anybody else providing credit, which is not them. That's one. Then we have some sort of set views on employment policies, which is about you either have a job or you're unemployed and therefore you get benefits. So a third way, which would be finding or creating your own job, is something that needs to be sort of promoted and understood as a possibility by governments. It's not really their priority today. And generally, where you have many more kind of neoliberal governments, they tend to think more of startups but not really of self-employment as a potential for growth. And where you have more, let's say, socialist oriented governments, they believe more in more assistential policies rather than anything to do with entrepreneurship. So entrepreneurship kind of falls in the crack. It's neither a kind of a startup that will bring you the next Google, but it's not either, let's say, an equivalent to an employment subsidy. So we have a lot of work there to do with sensibilizing the member states.
Where do you see problems in a bank providing microcredits, or do you believe that specialized microcredit organizations can deal with this issue better than banks?
It depends a little bit on what the activity, what that what does that really mean? I mean, if you are talking about, let's say, excluded populations, probably banks are not the most effective organizations. They don't have contact with those people. We talk about migrants, when you talk about people which have been long-term unemployed or which don't have any collateral, banks are not really appropriate for them. So it's better to go through specialized organizations. But when you talk about existing small enterprises or new small enterprises, I think the banks are more appropriate in terms of serving those. It's just that they are not the main priority today.
Where do you see main challenges for microfinance activities in the future in terms of, I don't know, maybe promotion legislation, measurement of its effects and so on?
I think we need an evolution of the, let's say, social protection system so that the incentives for becoming self-employed are bigger. And this way we will have more, let's say, people interested. And then at the same time, we need to develop, let's say, the supply side. So when those are interested, they can actually get the funding and the coaching necessary to make their ideas grow. So we need to really to work on two sides. To give you an idea, I don't know if it still exists, but I remember in Ireland, they had a program where if you were unemployed, you could, and you decided to start your own business, you had a transition period, I think if it was of 1 year, in which your unemployment benefits declined progressively as the revenues for your business increased. And after 1 year, you had to decide whether you stayed in the let's say, welfare system or you went for your business. But you had a transition that was made easy for you. If you take, for example, my home country, Spain, if you become independent, then you lose a lot of rights in terms of medical coverage, in terms of your pension, in terms of you actually have no unemployment benefit that you can go back to if something goes wrong. So the incentives are not there. And this kind of prevents many people from actually taking the step. It's quite a step. On the other hand, the banks don't really take this very seriously often. A little bit more in Central Europe, but in Western Europe they don't take this very seriously. They typically use their foundations with money they would sort of give away anyway to do some microcredit, but few are developing a specific business line for microcredit which they take serious and they put the resources to in terms of financial and human resources. So we would need to grow that to be able to cater for larger numbers of people.
Where do you see in all of this future role of European institutions such as, for example, European Parliament and, okay, European Commission, we already know that is actively promoting microcredit activities, but okay, let's say European Parliament in terms of legislation?
I think the Parliament can do a lot since they have great influence over the Commission. But in the end, it's really up to the member states to take this at hand. There is only a limit to what the Commission can do. They already do quite a lot, which is basically put funds on the table and sort of promote the idea. But we would need to have one or two countries in which they take this seriously, which could be used as examples. So it's much more at the national level today than at the European level. I think at the European level we've reached to a certain extent what we can do. There are still possible things. We could talk about specific sort of European status for micro-enterprises, which doesn't exist today, or for independent working or small businesses. We could have a specific figure for what a micro-lender would be, as a separate organization from either a bank or an NGO, which then would be taken over by the member state. So there are issues in which it can be advanced, but we definitely need the cooperation of the different countries. The Brussels can do only so much in the end.
Yo, I got this plan to make some money. I want you to keep this shit to yourself. At 6:15 a.m., the truck pulls out of the post office on Lancashire and Wilshire. Now it makes one stop before it goes to Sacramento, which is a mail drop-off. Our first federal loan and savings.
Eventually you die.
Svoje poglede na to problematiko nam je predstavil tudi velik poznavalec področja mikrokreditov v Evropski uniji, dr. Udo Reifner iz Finančnega inštituta v Hamburgu. Slednji se že dal časa zauzema za zakonsko regulacijo mikrokreditov, vendar v okviru in pod okriljem bank. Po njegovem mnenju je aktualna fama o mikrokreditih medijsko producirana in prenapihnjena. Mikrokreditne storitve bi morale opravljati banke, ki so na tem področju najbolj profesionalne in kompetentne, vendar pa bi ob tem morale razpršiti tveganja in biti zakonsko omejene pri višini obresti za revnejše sloje. Več nam bo razložil sam Reifner.
There is two notions of microfinance. So my notion of microfinance, and we do this study for about 15 years before Mohamed Yunus and the Nobel Prize winning ceremony took so much public space. So the question is, what is microfinance? And we say it's small credit for young entrepreneurs in order to be able to develop a business or something like that to earn their living. That's the idea. And then you look who is doing such business in Europe, and you will find that this is mostly to 99% done by banks. And then you look for the products which banks use, and mostly it's the overdraft credit which is used for this kind of credit. Then in some countries, credit card credit is used for it. So then the next step is you ask yourself, and that we did in our project, are there special schemes where especially the productive use of credit for small business creation is looked upon. And then we found a lot of examples in Europe, for example, state guarantee systems in it. We found a credit card for over-indebted people without interest in Italy. Then we found guarantee cooperatives where potential borrowers get together in order to borrow money from the banks. So my impression was that microlending, as it is defined by this microlending movement, is only a very small part and is mostly defined in a negative way. It's non-bank credit. This has been developed very much by all sides because we think that, or I personally and in this project we thought, that banks have a vested interest to get rid of these people, of this small credit, and that's why they support so much this non-bank credit business, because they can always say, okay, there are public institutions which take care of, we will support them, but you can't criticize us for not doing it because it's too difficult, it's too much, it's too costly. And our research found this is not true. Many banks, in fact, do it. They do it at reasonable prices, and the structure of this credit is much superior to the structure which is extended through very unprofessional lay person schemes, especially in Eastern Europe, where we looked at some of these schemes which were really a bit like Middle Ages. Without any modern systems. So the question was, why should the poor people and those who really start business should get the worst service available by people not skilled, without experience? And we therefore proposed at that time, before the Nobel Prize was given to these schemes, we proposed that the legislator should get the banks involved in these schemes, so that the regulation, in many countries you have a monopoly of banks, like for example in Germany, where no other people are allowed to extend credit. So there is no shortage of microcredit in Germany because the banks have to do it and everybody holds them responsible. And we said that such schemes should have the minimum conditions of very traditional and good small credit for startups, and that this could be legislated European-wide by in the third banking directive, for example. And there is place for it. And the problem which we see on European level is that you have so many rules concerning the investment services and payment services, but nearly no rules which really require from lenders a minimum standard in professional behavior, etc. This is still national rule. That's why, for example, in the UK or some other countries, we have very bad lenders who in fact give microfinance, but at interest rates which are sometimes above 400%.
So your emphasis is on banks providing these microloans. Do you think that this system of microfinances have any chance to work properly on a free market?
It does. I mean, if you look empirically also in the developing countries who really extends credit, in India or also takes the statistics of Bangladesh, then you will find this is all done by banks. And also the Grameen Bank is a bank. So it's not true that you can't do it through the banks. But of course there are some obstacles in banking. For example, banks have to some barriers, inbuilt barriers, you need a skilled president, four eyes principles, and so on, which are not necessary in very small credit. So our proposal was that banks should be able to create external institutions like they do in Bangladesh and refinance these institutions, but also monitor them, equip them with the software which is needed, and make them really high standard credit institution without the costs which are not necessary because they don't take in money. So that the idea is that we don't create a second outside market. I'm quite sure it is possible within the banking market, and the United States has shown where microfinance schemes have really lost importance, while the community reinvestment movement forced the banks into this business. And I have myself worked at South Shore Bank in Chicago, which is a development bank which gives small credit, but they don't do this with this ideology of microfinance. They say we give small credit to people who are credit worthy and can do something productive, and we help them through non-for-profit organizations and all these interesting things. I don't say that these lay institutions have not developed some new ideas, which I find as a laboratory, I would always support it. But for the big masses of people, I think we have a banking system, and the banking system should really welcome these people into their systems and spread the risk more evenly so that they also can profit. We can't resignate with a free market where banks say, oh, we only serve the wealthy and the rich people, and for the poor, the state or non-profit organizations should get in charge. My experience is it's bad quality, and with all these appraisals and with all these prices they give to microlending, this hasn't changed really. There's no true empirical research about the effects of microfinance. Everywhere you make more celebrations than really evaluations.
That is exactly my next question. Especially a system of microcredit organizations is under some serious criticism lately. Figures show that its effectiveness is questionable, and that it has attracted a whole set of different speculators and profiteers. It is true that these reproaches mainly concern developing countries, but do you think that it can be also good food for thought for EU on this field?
Yes, we had some research from my friend Greg Squires in the United States, who researched the microfinance schemes. Everything happened there 15 years before us. And what he found out is that such microfinance schemes work as long as there are state subsidies. And the politicians like it because it sounds so good. You don't spend money, you only give a credit, so you will get it back as a state. And people seem to be able to get out of the problems by their own force and so. But in fact, it's not true. The head of the biggest working capital, it was the name, microfinance organizations of the U.S., who finally went bankrupt, he wrote an article saying, we didn't create a single job through microfinance. Microfinance helps those who are already in business and try to keep it up, and there should be improvement in credit certainly, and there must be pressure on banks that they don't stop lending to people in problems. But a separate organization which gives the impression that those who are long-term unemployed, who are not even able to be on the first labor market, that they are even able to become entrepreneurs, is an illusion. What we should really employ, and I have the personal experience in Chicago, that you take people who already have jobs and say, why you are so good in your job, why don't you become an entrepreneur? So they give this job to somebody else and you should help them. So the ideology that the unemployment market is a big market for new entrepreneurs is not true. It's just not true, and it would be too nice to believe it. And that's why this sector attracts a lot of romantic people, yeah, who like more their feelings than their eyes, what they see and what they can really find. And there's a lot of money being poured into this sector. So sometimes I say you have more conferences than credit extended.
Okay, without government subsidies, how do you intend to address risk of high interests being charged to these poor people?
First, we have usury rates in many countries, which forbids this high interest. This is important, so the banks from the very beginning have to think in categories how they can spread the risk more evenly. The second thing is, I'm not against help and aid to banks in these special schemes. We have family guarantee schemes from state for young families. Why we have schemes, guarantee schemes for small entrepreneurs in nearly all states in Germany. France has a very sophisticated system where the communities, the cities, give credit to young entrepreneurs. This is all done. The Netherlands have the so-called people's credit banks, which are owned by the cities, and who do this kind of business. All of them are skilled and integrated banking facilities, and I think that's the what we have to develop. I'm afraid that the microlending success was mostly due to the this wave of banks to expel more and more people and to concentrate on investment banking. And they, a bank is not good as an investment. A bank is here for supplying the society with capital in the form of credit. And they should do this for all parts of society, not only for those where they can have the highest profit rates.
Vidimo, da obstaja v odnosu do delovanja mikrokreditov in socialnih posojil na splošno več različnih pogledov in pristopov. Richard Wellings iz britanskega neoliberalnega think tanka Institute of Economic Affairs v skladu z logiko prostega trga zagovarja čim manj regulative in vladnega vpletanja na tem področju. Zavzema se za večjo konkurenčnost in izbiro prepušča ljudem, kar je precej idealistična logika, ki je v praksi že večkrat pokazala svoje pomankljivosti.
Well, I think you've just got to leave it to people's common sense, and if they want to be assured that the business isn't going to go under, they should choose a reputable brand. And I know Zopa makes very very rigorous checks on its borrowers, and I think people aren't stupid. They know if they're getting, you know, a ridiculously high interest rate, then something's probably wrong.
So you think that it should be all based more on common sense than on any legislation?
That's right. I mean, as we've seen with the banks, the regulation can often be counterproductive, and it could be used by the established operators to sniff out any competition, which in the long run would harm the consumers.
But okay, we can say that this would also might be the case when there is no regulation.
Well, I mean, at the moment we do have regulation, and these peer-to-peer lending organizations are quite strictly regulated, so that isn't the case at the moment. But I think, I mean, there are examples in the past where we ended up with private regulation that was very effective. For example, with the stock markets all over the world, they used to be regulated privately, and financial institutions have thrived on private regulation. And it actually encourages them to behave conservatively because they have to inspire trust in their customers, whereas state regulation tends to inspire a false confidence that can lead to a misallocation of capital and so on.
Reifner se povsem nasprotno zauzema za striktno regulacijo, ki bi preprečevala zlorabe in bi vsebovala tudi določene socialne elemente s čutom odgovornosti za družbo. Njegovo mnenje je, da je tradicionalne bančne storitve nemogoče dobro nadomestiti. Na alternativne finančne storitve tako gleda precej skeptično.
Also this empirically is on a very low level. It's insignificant. This is a lot of newspapers like it and politicians like it. But look, that's how things started 400 years ago. And there was a long time why it developed into banks. Yeah, banks have a lot of additional possibilities with safety and all these criminality problems. And you already experience this kind of criminality in the third world, but I'm sure if one would have a closer look, also in this area, there's a lot of fraud ongoing. And do we really want this back, what we had in the 19th century? I don't think so. So professionalism and strict rules which govern credit and investment are necessary in the banking. And if you don't have confidence in banks, you should have even less confidence in those systems where no supervision at all takes place.
You're also active in European Coalition for Responsible Credit.
Yes.
Where do you see main flaws in actual banking system in EU, and what are the possibilities for its improvement in terms of regulation?
It is the answer I have already given. Banks are less and less inclined to serve the people, and they only try to keep the profitable credit with high margins and farm out the rest. Either to subsidiaries like Citibank did with City Financial, or in UK like the big banks created Providential and let them do the business, and instead of keeping the responsibility for it. This is one of the main problems. The second thing, the flaw in the bank, is that banks have successfully militated in the last 15 years for deregulation in consumer credit. Instead of regulating credit, they have imposed the EU has imposed so many information rights, but this doesn't help poor people and people in need of credit, because they are happy to have a credit, and they just happy to have it, and they don't have big choices. So it's a stupid idea to give them thousands pages. 35 pages now you need for a consumer credit contract, yeah? To give them all the paper and think this would ameliorate the quality of credit. What we really want has been all been written in the 2002 draft of the Consumer Credit Directive, which the lobbies so successfully suppressed. And then the 2004 draft was just the opposite. It was a deregulatory Consumer Credit Directive. What we need is strict rules, and there's a long, long history that everybody knows in history that credit needs some frame, some fences, because if not, then credit always tends to exploitation, usury, to exorbitant prices, and to exploiting those who have already lost their fortune.
Tako pa na kritike sistema mikrokreditov odgovarja Daniel Sorosal iz Evropske mreže mikrokreditnih organizacij.
I must say that the European Union is probably gone the other way. So in general, microfinance in Europe is seen as part of the employment and social policy or the cohesion policy for the regions. So we're really on the other side of the spectrum. In terms of profiteers and let's say speculators, today microfinance in Europe, it's not profitable. So I don't think they're going to be very, let's say, attracted by this. But on the other hand, the EU is at the moment developing a code of good conduct for European microfinance institutions, which is basically trying to address some of those issues in the case that they would become relevant for Europe. And we, for example, as a network, we have also our own code of good conduct, which the members are suggested to sign, and which has some principles about responsible lending, respecting clients, and not using any abusive techniques in terms of collecting debts, for example. So our members can object to sign it if they have a valid reason, but they cannot oppose it. If they oppose it, they cease to be our members. So I think in Europe we are not really in the same setup at all. And also, I don't think we should extrapolate what happens in, let's say, a far corner of India to what happens in Spain or in France or in Romania.
What, in the terms of effectiveness, do you possess some data, recent data, that would confirm its effectiveness?
I think the numbers are still modest to a certain extent compared to the potential. The latest figures we have is that around 85,000 microcredits were granted in the European Union in 2009, and the number of active clients, people that were still paying back their loans but they didn't necessarily get a new one, was about 135,000 people. So these are relatively big numbers, or numbers that are hard to ignore, but considering the population of the European Union, I think they're still quite modest. And this is due to the fact that most of the actors, most of the organizations are relatively small, and they are catering for, a local demand. We don't have nationwide organizations, or very few of them. So typically you have organizations that are dealing with a few hundred people every year, and they do that effectively, but they're not trying to reach, a few thousand every year. And therefore the numbers are relatively modest still. And it has to be understood as well that when you deal with somebody who is excluded and you try to sort of help that person become an entrepreneur, it is a relatively long learning process that takes time, which means that it's quite labor intensive. So you cannot have, thousands of people every year. The organizations just don't have the means to do that.
Kot vidimo stvari v tem trenutku, so eden glavnih problemov mikrokreditnih gibanj po svetu prevelika pričakovanja glede učinkov tovrstnih mehanizmov. Povrhu vsega dosedanje delovanje ni podprto z večjim številom celovitih in verodostojnih raziskav, ki bi ovrednotile uspešnost teh mehanizmov. Tržna ponudba mikrokreditov, ki je ponavadi brez nadzora in katere gonilna sila je zgolj dobiček, se je do zdaj večinoma izkazala za neuspešno. Pristop institucij Evropske unije bolj temelji na inkorporiranju mikrokreditnih mehanizmov v socialne namene, programe za spodbujanje zaposlovanja in vključenost ranljivih skupin v družbo. Tovrstni pristop, ki poleg zagotavljanja kreditnih sredstev predvideva tudi storitve, kot so svetovanje in izobraževanje, ima veliko več pozitivnih učinkov, kot je samo zagotavljanje bančnih sredstev. Glavni posrednik med Evropsko komisijo in mikrokreditnimi ponudniki v posameznih državah članicah Evropske unije je Evropski investicijski sklad. Njihov strokovnjak za mikrofinance, Saiji Suzuki Navarro, nam je predstavil programe sklada na področju mikrofinanc in njihovo delovanje.
Basically, what is microfinance at EIF, no, well, has been done for some time in the past, no, via some programs such as SIP and, for example, Jasmine, no, also was another recent program. However, in the recent past, EIF decided to formalize a specific investment team and team that was focused in the field of microfinance in the EU 27 mainly. No, among those programs that EIF manages are, for example, the Jasmine program, which is focused more on technical assistance. Then we had a small program called EPA, no, which is a program sponsored by the European Parliament and managed, on the Commission was granting it us to as a manager, where the focus was to for smaller microfinance institutions in the EU microfinance space to try to help them develop. And be able to become more operational to help the European micro-entrepreneur. No? Then, the largest program we are managing now is a European Progress Microfinance Facility, which is a very big EU-sponsored program, and also it's sponsored by the European Commission and by the European Investment Bank. No? So it's a 200 million program, whose objective is to support the development of entrepreneurship activities and microenterprises in the EU 27, especially in the context of social economy. No, so what does that mean? The objective of the European Progress Microfinance Facility is increase the access to finance to these micro-entrepreneurs and micro-enterprises in the EU 27, no? And within some type of social aspect. So that is, we try to focus on programs that are oriented to, for example, young entrepreneurs, or female entrepreneurs, or entrepreneurs also belonging to a minority group, no? So that's some examples of things we're trying to do under this EU program. The main objective is to give or increase the financing available to these traditionally micro enterprises or smaller enterprises that have had difficulties accessing the credit market so that they can develop their own enterprises and or also generate their own employment, and which has somehow worsened, no, as I'm sure you're aware of during this the context of the financial crisis. So basically, this is the flagship program we are managing here at EIS.
Okay, I know that the lifetime of these programs is still not quite long, but do you perhaps possess some information about their effectiveness still now?
Well, maybe it's a bit early in the sense that we still don't have enough data points. Of what I'm aware of, for example, the Jasmine project, there has been a great number of applicants, no, interested in the program, and in general, their feedback has been quite positive. No, as you know, the Jasmine program is oriented to, facilitate or give technical assistance to microfinance institutions, no, so that they can improve their level of service and they can be aware of what points they need to improve on, no. So in that sense, of the feedback we've gotten from the Jasmine IM program, it has been quite positive until now. With regards to the European Progress Microfinance Facility, I would say it's still too early because effectively the program officially was launched November 2010. And basically we are starting now, we have this recently this year, to speak and work with first initial microfinance institutions, no? However, we do see a lot of interest, no? As a benchmark, no, we do see a lot of interest and a lot of need, no, for the program. So we do have a lot of good expectations for it, no?
Can you explain what kind of non-banking activities are you trying to provide for your clients, if any?
Well, basically we cannot work directly with the micro entrepreneur because we don't have enough capacity, for all the micro entrepreneurs of the European Union. So we normally work through these microfinance institutions. So what do we do for them, no? For example, under the Jasmine program, what we do is we basically help them assess their business models or their workflows or, for example, their processes so they can deliver a higher quality service to the micro-entrepreneur. No? So that's one part of the program. Another program, which is the EPA program, basically what we can do there is for these micro-enterprises, no, or sorry, these microfinance intermediaries, we basically help them grow their activities. By growing their activities, it's basically that, one, they can have money so that they can pass it or give that money to the micro-entrepreneur, subject, obviously, to some certain conditions that we do impose. Second, they can also expand their capacities, no, to so that they can reach more, for example, in some EU member states, there's a lack of presence in rural areas, no? So we try to help them reach the micro-entrepreneur in those rural areas who have a greater difficulty, no, in accessing credit for their micro-entrepreneurial activities. The European Progress Microfinance Facility, it's what it does, it solely finances these financial intermediaries or microfinance intermediaries so that they can give microcredit, so increase the availability of microcredit to the micro enterprises. So if you see, there are three different aspects, no? So one is consulting, no, would I call it, type, so that they can see where these microfinance intermediaries can see and assess or help them as we help them assess where their strengths and weaknesses are and how they can improve them. Second, the second program, no, that was the EPA program, no. Basically, what it does is helps them develop or improve on those capabilities. And the European Progress Microfinance Facility, what it does is then gives the funding so that they can deliver on this money to the micro enterprise.
Do you see any obstacles in current member states' legislatives on this field, and how do you think your activities could be improved in future?
Well, I think we find a difficulty, you know, as you said, in the different countries, is that we have to deal with different economic and social realities, no? Because there's a great divergence or differences in social aspects, in what would be economic aspects, in the different member states. So we do have to be quite flexible and quick to adapt to those realities, no? So in that sense, that can sometimes pose a challenge, no? Because we obviously have to analyze the real needs, no? And have a conversations with the local actors, you know, to try to understand what are their needs. So it normally takes it's a process that takes time and involves a lot of conversation, you know, to find the best solution. So sometimes we would like a process a bit quicker in that sense, so that we could deliver more effectively, you know, and quicker. I think it's important that we're able to deliver in an efficient way, so that the money reaches finally to the micro enterprises in the moment of need, like this one. Finance institutions that can deliver a microcredit in each member state, including hopefully Slovenia, we will publish the name of these institutions in our webpage at www.eif.org, and there any person interested, and also any microenterprise, any microentrepreneur interested in obtaining microcredit will be able to see, once we sign the appropriate agreements, now we'll be able to see in that webpage the institution in their country where they can go to ask for microloans.
So right now you're not dealing with any microfinance organization in Slovenia?
No, unfortunately, not yet. No, since we launched recently the program. However, we are in conversation, you know, with institutions in Slovenia, which unfortunately, due to the confidentiality agreement we signed, I cannot disclose yet. But hopefully, we will be able to advance and try to offer something in Slovenia to the Slovenian micro enterprises and entrepreneurs.
Kot smo slišali, Evropski investicijski sklad zaenkrat še ne sodeluje z nobenim ponudnikom mikrokreditnih storitev pri nas. Specializirana dejavnost na področju investicij za delovanje malih in srednje velikih podjetij poteka prek Slovenskega podjetniškega sklada. V okviru rednih programov pa mikrokredite ponuja tudi večina naših bank. Mehanizem podeljevanja mikrokreditnih sredstev Slovenskega podjetniškega sklada nam je predstavila njegova direktorica Maja Tomanič-Vidovič.
Ja, Slovenski podjetniški sklad ponuja garancijsko schemo, kar pomeni, da sodelujemo z slovenskimi bankami. Banke izdajo kredite slovenskim malim in srednje velikim podjetjem, mi pa te kredite zavarujemo, delno zavarujemo za garancijo in hkrati znižujemo tudi obrestno mero. Da lahko govorimo tudi o mikrokreditih, je predvsem dejstvo to, da so lahko ti krediti tudi nižje vrednosti in uporabljeni tudi za čista obratna sredstva, se pravi za tekoče poslovanje podjetij, kjer se kredit lahko giblje ta maksimalno do 100 tisoč evrov, če gre za res malo mikropodjetje. To so torej te naše oblike pomoči, ki so potem lahko hkrati namenjene tudi začetnikom, startupom, se pravi tudi novim podjetjem in seveda skladno v sodelovanju z slovenskimi bankami, pač te posebne ciljne skupine vsako leto bolj podpiramo.
Aha, ali nudite tudi kakšne druge nebančne storitve poleg dajanja kreditov, kot je svetovanje, izobraževanje in tako naprej, kot je običajna praksa pri mikrokreditnih organizacijah po svetu?
Slovenski podjetniški sklad je finančna institucija. Pod okriljem ministrstva za gospodarstvo je naš osnovni namen olajšati dostop do finančnih virov. Seveda pa pride zraven tudi do tega, da s podjetji tako ali drugače komuniciramo, da za podjetja pripravljamo delavnice, predvsem pred objavami letnih razpisov ali pa tudi vmes. Pripravljamo tudi dneve odprtih vrat, ko organiziramo infotočke, na katerih podjetjem dajemo vse informacije. Seveda pa so naše informacije v različnih oblikah dostopne na zelo pregleden način tudi preko naše spletne strani in pa preko svetovalnega telefona, kar pa tako ali tako dnevno teče. Hkrati z to vrstno pomočjo smo oblikovali tudi nekaj brezplačnih pripomočkov na naši spletni strani, tako za pripravo poslovnega načrta, na podlagi katerega podjetje lahko na hiter, enostaven in pregleden način pripravijo svoj poslovni načrt in pa tudi potem nekaj ostalih pripomočkov, na primer, da si znajo izračunati amortizacijski načrt za kredit, torej da vidijo, koliko obresti bodo plačali, če bo kredit vezan na 10 let ali če bo višja obrestna mera ali nižja obrestna mera. Tako da to je kar nekaj takih pripomočkov, ki jih podjetja s pridom uporabljajo. Sploh, če gre za tista mikropodjetja, ki nimajo niti toliko resursov, niti časa, da bi imela posebej ljudi zadolžene za to vrstna področja. Tako da ta pomoč zagotovo je. Ob tej nekreditni pomoči so pa tukaj tudi subvencije, mikrosubvencije, bi jim res lahko rekli, za čiste začetnike, za startupe, ki so mlajši od 12 mesecev in začenjajo svojo podjetniško pot, ter so vključeni v tehnološke parke in inkubatorje, kar pomeni, da bodo podjetje gradili na nekem tudi na lastnem znanju, na inovativnosti, ki jo bodo sami razvijali v tem podjetju. Tem pa je namenjenih do 70 000 evrov subvencije, v 3 letih pa ta sredstva lahko prejmejo, če gredo pač čez ta razvojni program, kot ga sami planirajo in ga tudi prijavijo potem na naš javni razpis. Glede mehanizmov nadzorovanja, seveda imamo vzpostavljene, gre tudi veliko krat za evropska sredstva, ki so uporabljena, tako da je potrebno upoštevati vsa pravila, tako pravila državnih pomoči, kot potem tudi nadzora in podjetja pristanejo na to, da jih lahko kadarkoli v času koriščenja teh pomoči ali pa tudi kasneje v času 5 let obiščejo različni nadzorni organi, tako slovenski kot tudi Evropske unije. Hkrati pa mi podjetje spremljamo še 3 leta po zaključku oziroma po prejemu pomoči in merimo učinke, kaj so dosegli, kaj niso in tudi skladno z rezultati, ki so jih napovedali, po 3 letih naredimo evidenco, koliko tega je bilo realiziranega, kajti v primeru prevelikih odstopanj in nedoseganja rezultatov, ki so jih zastavili, ko so se prijavljali na razpis in bili tudi pozitivno ocenjeni, lahko pride tudi do vračila državne pomoči.
Za konec smo preverili še, koliko so o socialnih posojilih ozaveščeni ljubljanski študenti in slaba odzivnost je bila kar nekako pričakovana.
Poznaš mogoče socialna posojila?
Ne, ne poznam.
Pa ti kaj pade na pamet, ko slišiš to?
Ja, boš veh. Ne vem.
Kaj pa mikrokredite? Si šli so do njih?
Tudi ne.
Pa tudi ne veš, kaj bi recimo...
Ja, kredit vem, ba je, ne.
Kaj pa mikrokredit?
Je verjetno kredit, sem da imen.
Ne.
Recimo, kaj ti pade na pamet, ko slišiš za socialno posojilo?
Ne vem, pač posojilo od države za tiste, ki si ne morejo prvošiti, ne vem, posojila od bank. Ne vem, pač majhni krediti, ne vem, do 50-100 evrov.
Ne.
Pa si kaj predstavljaš, če se imam potem?
Ne, sploh zakaj se gre. To si napačno najdu, res, ko se ne spoznam tukaj na te reči.
Ne.
Pa si predstavljaš, kaj recimo potem?
Ja, posojilo je že nekaj stvar.
Ampak socialno posojilo, recimo.
Za preživetje ali kako, ne vem.
Ja.
Ne, socialna posojila. Ne.
Kaj pa mikrokredite? Da nisi slišal.
To so, ja, beseda se mi zdi, da ti sama po sebi pomeni pač manjše krediti, oziroma manjša posojila. Kaj pa vem, ko morajo biti, ne vem, ustrezni pogoji, da ti jih lahko dajo.
Socialna, kak?
Socialna posojila.
Pojma nima.
Pa si predstavljaš, kaj recimo potem?
Pač, ne, mislim, ne da se mi študirati v tem res, ne.
Ne poznam. Ja, je škola.
Kaj pa mikrokredite? Si že slišal za njih?
Ne poznam, njih je še slišal, ne.
Poznam.
A koliko več poveš o njih?
Ne.
Aj, predvsem...
Slišal sem že, no, druga pa bolj tak.
Kaj pa mikrokredite, zato si tudi slišal?
Ja, tudi je. Pa ful neke velike obresti, račune, to sem tudi slišal. Neke mikrokrediti, to pa to.
Joj, ne.
Pa si predstavljaš kaj recimo pod mikrokrediti, kaj bi to lahko bilo?
Mikrokrediti. Socialna posojila.
Manjši kredit, pač za, ne vem,
ne vem, za, nimam pojma. Ne vem, za tiste, ki so socialno bolj ogrožene. Kaj takšnega, ne vem.
Posojilo v primeru socialne stiske.
Kaj pa recimo mikrokredit?
Mali kredit.
Težko.
Ali pa mikrokrediti, si že slišal za njih?
Tudi ne.
A to so ko neka ta študentska posojila, ne poznam.
Pa recimo si predstavljaš kaj pod socialnimi posojili?
Ja, da je nekdo socialno ogrožen in dobi posojilo.
Dobar dan. Pozdravljeni v naši krasni banki.
Zdravo. Rabim 100 evrov.
Ste plačilno sposobni? Ste za spremenljivo obrestno mero? Mogoče nespremenljivo. Že varčujete pri nas? Vas zanima zavarovanje za primer smrti? Ste za dokapitalizacijo naše banke?
Mah, dej mi kar celo blagajno.
Brez skrbi. Alternative so.
Prisluhnite spoznanjem in dognanjem na področju socialnih posojil v oddaji Eurepa, v kateri preverjamo delovanje londonske organizacije ZOPA UK Loans ter evropsko in domačo politiko do alternativ, ki jih ponujajo socialna posojila. 29. maja ob 10. na valovih Radija Študent.
Eurepa. Delno jo podpira Evropski parlament.